Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to ModPath Chat, the official podcast of Modern Pathology, featuring interviews with authors and experts on the latest science, technology, and developments in the field of pathology. Your host, Dr. George Netto, is the editor-in-chief of Modern Pathology and the chair of pathology at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Here's Dr. Netto.
Welcome to a new episode of ModPath Chat. My guest today is Dr. Stuart Schnitt. Dr. Schnitt is the chief of breast oncologic pathology at the Dana-Farber and Brigham and Women's Hospital, where he also serves as the associate director of their breast oncology program. He is a professor of pathology at Harvard Medical School. Usually, I try to make the introduction short, but in this case, given the strong and intertwined career that Dr. Schnitt had with the USCAP, and the USCAP being our academy of the journal, I want to highlight that he is a past president of the academy and has been the recipient of many awards, probably all the awards that we have in the academy, that you've got them at one time or another, Stu. So he's the recipient of the Arthur Purdy Stout Society Annual Prize, the F.K. Mostofi Service Award, and the Harvey Goldman Teaching Award. So we couldn't have a greater contributor to USCAP than Dr. Schnitt today. Thank you, Stu, for accepting my invitation.
Thank you, George. I really appreciate being invited to participate in this podcast, and I hope I can sort of inform you about more details related to our article.
Excellent. So the article that we're going to discuss, and we were discussing before the podcast, is becoming a trend in many organ systems. We're looking at post-neoadjuvant chemotherapy, evaluating the histologic changes in the various tumors. And of course, in this case, is breast cancer that we're going to focus on. And it's related to what can we discern some clinical pathologic features pre-therapy that can predict the patterns. So that's the article that came out online recently and also in print. So let's start by saying why did you do the study?
So the reason we did this study is, as you noted, more and more patients with breast cancer are being treated with neoadjuvant chemotherapy. And among those who have residual disease, that is those who don't have a pathologic complete response, we and others for many years have noticed that there are different patterns of residual disease. And there has been this urban legend out there for years that ER-positive tumors tend to have a scattered pattern of response, and triple-negative breast cancers tend to have a circumscribed pattern of response. And you see that cited in many articles, typically without any references. Mm-hmm. So when we actually went to find the data on which those statements were based, we didn't find any. I was absolutely shocked. I couldn't find any scientific papers published in peer-reviewed journals that actually provided data to support that. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those things where, you know, in my career, I've had several studies where I thought of an idea for a study and I said, somebody must have done this. I mean, it's so obvious. But this was another example where, you know, I said, somebody had to have done this. Otherwise, where would these data come from? But nobody had done a study
so
like
it was
this before.
Purely based on our personal observations. Yeah. And none of us went and did it.
Yeah, exactly. So, and you know, I think a lot of it may have been based on radiologic findings that, you know, the radiologic residual disease tended to be more scattered in patients with ER positive than triple negative breast cancers. But, so we decided to look at this in a systematic way. And Terry King, who's the chief of breast surgical oncology at our institution, had put together a cohort of women treated with neoadjuvant chemotherapy at our institution for breast cancer between 2004 and 2014. So already this is sort of an older population, you know, in terms of time. But there, the advantage is that there is now, you know, long-term follow-up, you know, for these patients. So we identified 665 patients treated with neoadjuvant chemotherapy in that time period for whom the slides were available for review. And among those, there were 389 patients who did not have a PCR and had residual disease in the breast. And those patients really were the focus of the study to evaluate the patterns of residual disease in the breast in those patients who didn't have a PCR. Now, then the issue was, well, how do we define the patterns of response? So again, I went to the literature and there was nothing. There were no guidelines on what criteria you should use to categorize the patterns of response as circumscribed or diffuse or multifocal or scattered. So, you know, this actually took us a very long time. We looked at probably, I don't know, 40 or 50 cases, consecutive cases of patients treated with neoadjuvant chemotherapy, just to try to see if we can bundle these into different categories. So we eventually came up with a schema that I think should be fairly reproducible and is highlighted in our figure two. And we basically came up with four patterns of residual disease, two of which are more circumscribed and two of which are more diffuse. And I don't need to go into the details now, but for the purposes of the analysis in the study, we broke the patterns of residual disease into these two broad categories of relatively circumscribed and more scattered.
And the images you show, I mean, the circumscribed, some cases in the circumscribed do have some fibrosis and, right. and separating the nest. So it doesn't mean just all of them is one
Correct.
Nodule. But in general, you can almost put your draw a line around.
Exactly. And there are no intervening slides between the slides with tumor that are just fibrosis or tumor bed. So you're right. You're absolutely right. The circumscribed pattern doesn't need to be a solid sheet of cells. Some of the circumscribed lesions had, you know, a little bit of fibrosis in between them, but not a lot of fibrosis breaking it up into individual cells or small cell nests. So the bulk of this work was actually done by Ricardo Pastorello, who's a pathologist from Brazil, who was doing a research fellowship with the Breast Surgical Oncology Group and worked with me closely on, you know, the pathology related issues. And Ricardo did an amazing job. There were thousands of slides, as you can imagine, from, you know, almost 400 cases of post-neoadjuvant breast specimens. And as you probably know, in these post-neoadjuvant cases, we often have to put through lots of slides because we're looking to find cases with a PCR or that is to prove a negative. And it always takes more slides to prove a negative than if you have a 15 centimeter tumor sitting in the breast, right? You don't need a lot of slides for that.
I just want to remind the audience, PCR here refers to pathologic complete response.
Correct. Yeah. Thanks. So anyway, Ricardo, you know, looked at all of these slides, and I looked at a whole bunch with him to make sure we were on the same page, looked at cases in which there were questions or concerns. The problem is, in order to categorize these tumors and the residual disease in the various patterns, it wasn't only good enough to look at the gross description in the pathology report. We needed to look at the radiology findings in many of these cases as well. So it really required a combination of clinical and radiologic and pathologic features to try to figure out these patterns of residual disease. disease. But again, it emphasizes the multidisciplinary effort that's really required, you know, to adequately deal with breast specimens and many other specimens as well.
So you do that on a day-to-day basis, or this is something you did just for research?
No, we do that on a day-to-day basis. I mean, you know, I can't tell you how much time our breast fellows and residents spend on EPIC, you know, looking up the radiologic images, and particularly when we get specimens, you know, very often, even in the non-neoadjuvant mastectomy specimens, these patients often have had two or more excisions with different clips. So we need to correlate, you know, which clip went with which excision and what were the pathologic findings in each excision. So these cases require an enormous amount of work. But really, doing them without without radiologic correlation really is not doing anybody a service.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
So beside the patterns, which now let's move. So we spoke about the design and impressive number of cases and follow-up. For the findings, I know we talked about the patterns, but there was an element looking at the actual cytology, right? The elements of how the tumor looked.
So in addition to differences in pattern, let me just say that the sort of single bullet finding in this study was that, in fact, what was the urban legend proved to be correct. So we found that about 90% of patients with hormone receptor positive HER2 negative disease, among those who had residual disease, had a scattered pattern, whereas only about 10% of those patients had a circumscribed pattern. In contrast, among triple negative breast cancers, the residual patterns were pretty much split. Half had a scattered pattern and half had a more circumscribed pattern. And you know, there are all kinds of biological possibilities about why that may be the case. We could talk about that later if we have time. But another, you know, observation we made was that there were differences among different tumor subtypes with regard to what the tumor cells looked like after chemotherapy, and actually what changes were in the tumor bed after chemotherapy. So among tumor cell changes, things like moderate or marked cytologic atypia, vacuolization or foaminess of the cytoplasm, and tumor cells looking like histiocytes were all features that were much more common in residual tumor among patients with triple negative disease than among patients with hormone receptor positive disease. In addition, if you look at the tumor bed, the tumor beds look somewhat different among these different breast cancer subtypes. So the tumor beds in patients with triple negative disease tended to have more prominent foamy histiocytes, hemosiderin-laden histiocytes or macrophages, and hemosiderin deposition, whereas the stroma in ER-positive or hormone receptor-positive tumors tended to more likely show things like elastosis and myxoid change.
Traditional stuff.
Yeah.
And of course, I mean, it's a little counterintuitive, but I want to remind, you know, one of the expected findings, I guess, that the ER positive HER2 negative group, only 7%, 7 to 8% had complete PCR response.
Right.
And as opposed to the others more aggressive responded more in terms of complete response.
Exactly. So, I mean, this is nothing new, but it actually just confirms that our data are in keeping with everybody else's, that, you know, neoadjuvant chemotherapy pathologic complete responses are much higher in triple negative and HER2 positive cancers than hormone receptor positives. And in our series, the PCR rate for HER2 positive and triple negative breast cancers was about 40%. But remember, these were patients treated between 2004 and 2014. Over the last 5 or 6 years, there are some studies that show PCR rates on the order of 50-60% for triple negative breast cancers and HER2 positive breast cancers. So chemotherapy and HER2 targeted therapy has even gotten better than, you know, when we did our study in terms of those subgroups of patients.
So things may change down the road if we look at even future patients.
Yes.
So what is first, did you feel that now, I know you did it blindly, you didn't know who received and what kind of therapy, what kind of tumor was the pre. You think now looking at the post, you're more able to predict this is a HER2 positive, this used to be a triple negative?
Or? Yeah. I like to play this game with our residents and fellows. Uh-huh. When I sign out, I look at the post-neoadjuvant specimen and I say, don't tell me anything about the pre-treatment specimen. And, you know, I try to predict what the receptor status was. But, you know, given the fact that 90% of hormone receptor positive HER2 negatives have a scattered pattern of residual disease, you know, if you're a betting person, if you see a scattered pattern of residual disease, I think you should say that it's likely to be hormone receptor positive. I mean, you're going to be wrong in some cases, but, you know, on the other hand, if you see a circumscribed pattern, that's really uncommon in hormone receptor positive disease.
So clearly, I mean, the purpose is now, okay, so maybe this should guide how surgery upfront was done, or so tell us what you expect this is, what's the
next? Yeah, so I think there are several issues that we still want to further investigate. One is, what is the clinical significance of the different patterns of residual disease? Did they predict subsequent local regional recurrence? Did they predict subsequent systemic recurrence? We don't know that. We're actually looking at that in this series now. One of the junior breast surgeons is doing that analysis. But the other thing is that this may help to guide post-neoadjuvant chemotherapy surgery. So, you know, a meta-analysis has shown that there is no difference between adjuvant chemotherapy and neoadjuvant chemotherapy in terms of recurrence-free or overall survival. So the whole reason for doing, well, one of the main reasons for doing neoadjuvant therapy is to kind of downstage the tumors so that patients who may have needed a mastectomy can then be treated with breast-conserving therapy. So The idea would be to, you know, after chemotherapy, prevent as many people from needing a mastectomy as possible. So, you know, if we know, for example, that the residual tumor is more likely to be circumscribed, the surgeon may feel more confident in doing a local excision than saying the patient needs a mastectomy. So I think, you know, our data suggests that for triple negative breast cancers, those patients may actually be more likely to be adequately treated with a lumpectomy than a mastectomy for somebody who has scattered residual disease all over the breast.
So maybe that less is okay.
Yeah.
Less aggressive is okay. Wow. That's from the biology, why do you think? Yeah, you touched upon it. So let's finish with
that. So it's really interesting. So, you know, whenever I see data like this, you know, you could say, well, hormone receptor positive cases are more likely to be scattered, triple negative more likely to be circumscribed. But 10% of the hormone receptor positive cases are circumscribed, and 50% of the triple negatives are scattered. So why are some triple negatives scattered, and why are some triple negatives more circumscribed? And we don't have any idea why. I mean, it's been hypothesized by one of my basic science colleagues that maybe this has to do with chemo-resistant stem cells that are a small population, and that perhaps among hormone receptor positive cases, the scattered pattern is due to sort of these scattered stem cells in the tumor, and the chemotherapy knocks off the more resistant proliferating cells and leaves these residual stem cells and their, you know, immediate progeny scattered around. And that maybe that's an epigenetic event, but, you know, who knows? And in fact, when we generated these data, I talked to one of my basic science colleagues who was absolutely intrigued by this and said that maybe he would get one of his postdocs to start looking at, you know, sort of the stem cell niche and the reasons for chemotherapy resistance in some of these cases at a molecular level. So, you know, it's yet another example of how, you know, again, if you look back at this study, there's not an immunostain that was done on these cases. There wasn't any molecular stuff. So studies like this prove that good old-fashioned, very careful and vigilant H&E examination can generate clinically important data, or at least what I think are clinically important data, even in 2021.
I think it's a safe bet. If you think it's important, then probably it is important in breast cancer. So, Stu, thank you very much. So one last question before I let you go is, do you report include anything like this about the patterns, the amounts? Because I know in other organs, people are starting to grade the residual and in terms of amount. Do you do anything like that in breast?
Yeah. So in breast in the United States, the two ways we typically categorize the post treatment residual disease is using the AJCC staging system and using the residual cancer burden that was developed by our colleagues at MD Anderson. And the residual cancer burden takes into account the size of the tumor bed, the percent cellularity, the percent of the tumor that's DCIS, nodal status, the size of the biggest node. And there is a computer program on the MD Anderson website where we plug in that number and we get the RCB score, which is prognostic in all types of breast cancer. So that's largely what our clinicians use to guide further therapy now. But, you know, again, that brings up the question, if somebody has RCB2, which is the middle grade, and has scattered residual disease, is that the same as RCB2 and circumscribed residual disease? We have no idea.
Maybe that's the next study.
All right. So for those residents and fellows out there, there are still more studies to do.
Exactly. Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to have you this morning, and look forward to more of your work and more of your involvement in ASCAP.
Thanks again, and thanks for your interest.
Any opinions expressed in this podcast are the speaker's own and do not represent the views of Modern Pathology, Springer Nature, UAB, or USCAP. Your ModPath Chat host and scientific director is Dr. George Netto. Producers are Christina Crow, Amber Jackson, Dr. Sarah Jang, and Dr. Catherine Ketchum. Technical direction is provided by Kaminsky Productions, music by Mitch Neubauer. Thanks to the authors, reviewers, and editors of Modern Pathology for making this podcast possible.